Who's the hot super blog that's a switch machine to all the folk? Switch. You're so right. Hey there, guys. Want to switch your current account? Let me tell you about Switch. Switch. The Switch guarantee means all your payments move automatically.
Switch. Switching current accounts has never been easier. Over 3 million people have moved banks with the Current Account Switch service. Visit currentaccountswitch.co.uk.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the game. I'm Russ Cohen. Our intro music didn't fire. We have Nico Riesgo. Nico, how are you?
Russ Cohen, my man.
So we're doing good here, and we'll just get right on with the show. We've got a guest, Rick Morris from the FDH Lounge. He is a lifelong Cleveland Indians fan, but he's also pretty objective, and he's having a good time so far. Rick, how are you?
Doing great, thank you. Go try.
So let's talk about the Indians. I mean, they're up 2-0. Toronto's got a great hitting team. Is this, like, too much for you to handle? Like, you know, it's been a while since they've been this good. And, you know, you've dealt with your fair share of crappy years there.
Yes, I have. It's one of these scenarios where Cleveland is up 2-0 on Toronto with the series going back to Toronto. I feel like I heard that somewhere like 4 or 5 months ago, but I can only hope that it ends every bit as well, hopefully without some of the drama in between. But the Blue Jays are no Raptors, put it that way. The Blue Jays are a legit threat. I thought the Indians would get through in the end in kind of the scenario you've been seeing so far, but I remain extraordinarily terrified of this Blue Jays team, and I believe there's probably like a 14-1 pasting coming our way before this thing is done. I just hope everyone here doesn't lose their minds.
Yeah, we got to face Aaron Sanchez, too. You figure he's going to throw one of those games up there. They got to get a win. They're at home. If they don't get a win, they're out of it. And the Indians are just so good. I've never seen an Indians team like this in my life, really, when you look at all the Indians team. I mean, unless you want to go way back to, like, with the 48s or something when they won the World Series or something.
Yeah.
But I've never seen a team like this. This is like this an overall
I'm
team. They beat you all ways.
Well, I'll tell
stylistically,
in terms of the grit, I feel like it reminds me a lot of the 97 team because that was the team out of the run in the 90s. And I know some of my friends feel the same way. That was kind of our favorite team. It had that kind of National League vibe because of Grissom and Matt Williams being here and Dave Justice. And that was a team that kept finding ways to win. John Smiley gets acquired to be the big arm, goes down with the injury. Let us not forget that if Mike Hargrove doesn't make the disastrous move of pulling Brian Anderson in Game 7 of the World Series, Chad freaking OJ is the MVP of the World Series with 2 wins. So the parallels aren't exact, but as far as a gut feel, this feels like 97. I just obviously hope it ends better.
Yeah, I can see it.
I can see it. Now, back in 48, I'm imagining Al Rosen was on third base. But let's talk about, Rick, let's talk about Corey Kluber a little bit. A couple weeks ago, I brought up to Nico, I thought that may have been the best trade in Cleveland Indians history. He goes out there and pitches 6 1/3, 6 hits, no runs, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, mixing his pitches. Really just kept Toronto off, really just on edge the entire game. And he was coming off an injury. Like, just an amazing performance and really got the series off to a good start.
He's a masterful guy. The Klubot, as he is known in town here, for just being just kind of relentless, low-key, goes about his job in a very business-like fashion, not very charismatic, but really, who cares when you get the results that you do, and I agree with you, and that's one of those things, as we were talking about off air, I have to say, I think the most valuable coach in baseball right now, the Leo Mazzoni 2K16, is Mickey Callaway. I just don't think there's anybody else that's on his level in baseball at the moment here, because Corey Kluber came in with the profile of maybe being a number 5 starter, and you go on down the line that I remember that you were kind of hyped about Carlos Carrasco when the Indians got him, and I thought he was a prospect whose best days had gone by the wayside, and I was right until Mickey Callaway got a hold of him, and then you were right. and on it goes here. And the job that he did in concert with Kluber is amazing. And I think Kluber has been the only legitimate ace in either series thus far. The Blue Jays have a number of pitchers who I would consider to be very, very good. But I don't think they miss enough bats quite yet to be considered ace pitchers.
Yeah, and Kluber is the Cy Young. I mean, he's a Cy Young winner, so when he goes out there, he's no schmo. I mean, he's one of the best ever, and he's just proven himself to be one of those dominant pitchers, and he just took over the game. And I don't think the Blue Jays expected it to be that dominant.
No, and I'll tell you what, game two, more of the same with Josh Tomlin. That's the guy you really don't expect it from, but he started working that curve against them and getting a lot of the first pitch strikes, and that's where it goes to the Callaway effect here of just raising the game of everybody. And this is a day and age, of course, of analytics, advanced statistics, whatever, and every team's got them at their disposal. When you have a Mickey Callaway, you're able to do that. You're looking at the heat charts of where you want to go at the guys, but you've also got just these kind of inherent things that he's able to put into their head as far as being more effective pitchers. And you guys are so right about what he's done for Kluber, and that would be two Cy Youngs in 3 years.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, so we look at where things are, and we have to give Terry Francona a lot of this credit. And we look at managers, and you and I were kind of laughing because, you know, there have been some managers that are very good and pitching friendly, even though, you know, the manager has a pitching coach, but he still has to make the ultimate decisions with them. And then there have been some managers that weren't pitching friendly, and I brought up, I love to bring up the 1980 Oakland A's with Billy Martin. I mean, basically, you had Rick Langford throw 290 innings, Mike Norris threw 284 innings, Matt Keogh threw 250, Steve McCaddy threw 221, and Brian Kingman threw 211. The complete games, 28 for Langford, 24 for Norris, 20 for Keogh, and then like 11 and 10. Like, these guys were never the same after this. And those complete games just sort of ruin the guys. Now, Francona's sort of in the middle. He doesn't seem to pull guys too early, and I really don't like those managers that pull them too early. I just remember too many of those guys. Even Terry Collins can be that guy. But he does seem to get them out at the right time. Is that your take on him?
I think that's absolutely the case. And I think that, again, as far as the efficiency goes and when to go to the bullpen, and obviously it gets a lot easier when you have a weapon like Andrew Miller out there. But then again, let's give Francona credit for knowing how to use him. I think people just assumed when the trade was made that it was going to be the standard eighth inning, ninth inning type thing. The prototype, I'd say, I always kind of invoke this of like the 96 Yankees. That's the one that everybody has kind of gone for on the rare occasions they've been able to make it work ever since. But no, Andrew Miller's going in high leverage situations. He's using him there. And another thing you and I were talking about off air, I really think right now in baseball, with the retirements of some of the legendary managers we've seen the last couple of years, to me the top tier is only three deep in whatever order. It's Bruce Bochy, Terry Francona, Joe Maddon. As an Indians fan, that is one of about a million things that makes me nervous about seeing the Cubs potentially in the World Series. The rest of the world wants to see it. I want no part of that. Not that the Dodgers are schlubs, but I'd much rather, as an Indians perspective, see that, because I'd rather get Dave Roberts than Joe Maddon in the other dugout, because Terry Francona, he'll give you that advantage over, I believe, 27 other teams in baseball on any given night.
Yeah, Francona is the key there with the Indians. Francona has come to the Indians, and everyone in baseball knew it's only a matter of time before he wins a World Series there, because if they're going to win a World Series in our lifetime, Terry Francona is the man to bring it there. He's just tied to that city. He was a player there, and now he's managing there. And just so much insight there, so much love and so much passion. I mean, he bleeds a World Series, and he's going to get it. He's going to get it. They're real close. And the only people that are stopping him, I wouldn't leave Dave Rogers out of that manager of the year race.
No,
Robert
is
up
solid
managers, but Robert has showed himself he could be better than all of them, and you didn't even name him. And I'd be afraid to face him in the World Series, because you never know what he's going to do, and these Dodgers are just so unpredictable.
Yeah, he's good at moving guys around, and you're right about that. But one of the things with Francona also, I'll tell you, is the G-rated version would be chicken S out of into chicken salad, because this outfield, you know, you look up and down this lineup. Yeah, there's guys having career years, you know, Party at Napoli's. You got Rajay Davis having a career year, Carlos Santana. But this outfield, this patchwork kind of a deal, and you're right about Dave Roberts and why he's done so well in his first year. Francona's doing a lot of the same thing here, you know, moving guys around, platooning, getting the most out of guys. This is not an impressive offensive group on paper. These numbers have really overshot the mark for what you would expect from this crew.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, talking about that lineup, there's one guy who I always focus on this team, and it seems to be Jason Kipnis. I don't know why, because, look, there's better players. There's maybe not better Indians, though. And if I think about the heart of the Indians, he's been with them since, like, 2009. He just seems to do everything well. And I'm curious your take on Kipnis and on his importance to the team.
Well, as the saying has been adapted in town here in recent years, we're all Kipnises. Yeah, that has certainly been out there. But I think I may know why. I think I know why, perhaps on a subconscious level, you may be thinking of him there, because of the two great second basemen of the last 30 years. Ryne Sandberg passed through your area of Philly as a manager, and then you had Chase Utley.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the guys you think about when you the prototype of an offensive second baseman, right? Those are the guys that come into my mind. And with Jason Kipnis, when he's at his best, he's on that level. And he spent a couple of years south of that level, to be honest with you. And there was this whole sense of, was it a flash in the pan, whatever. But he's been healthy. He's worked on his game. He's gotten back to that point. And, again, at his best, he's on the level of those guys in the production that they would give you as far as being a prototype offensive second baseman.
And he plays every day. I mean, you can see he's out there since day one that he's been an Indian. He's been, you know, his whole heart, he bleeds Indian. And he's one of the players, I think, like you said, he's the oldest player. He's probably the veteran there. He's the leader of that team. And it's his heart and soul that's there, right there, second in the lineup. And he's there every day. So he can show up and he's the same guy and he produces. That's all he does. And, you know, Linder, that shortstop they got right behind him, he's turned out to be a phenom. So you've got a couple of phenoms here developing in the early stages around a couple of veterans. It could, like I said, it's a good mix for just like, you know, the greatness of baseball. That's how it comes out.
Lindor is amazing. You talk about star power.
Yeah.
I mean, Omar Vizquel with a bat. You know, this kid is almost too good to be true, and you're really kind of seeing it here. Nobody in baseball covers more ground than him, and he's a much better hitter, I think, than just about anybody, certainly myself included, thought he was going to be.
I had Carlos Santana a year ago on a fantasy team, and he was great He wasn't as great then, obviously, but the thing was you could see he had power, and you could see that because he was a catcher, it was good to have him in the lineup. This year he's got 34 homers, hit the most he's ever hit, and yet Francona has used him as a leadoff hitter. I see he's got a 366 on base, but it just seems inconceivable. Like, what the hell is up with that?
It's weird, but it's one of these things you're seeing across baseball, and this being a year where the home run total has just exploded this year, whilst the number of runs scored overall is relatively steady. And that's one of the things I think. I mean, you can't point to that as a predominant factor, the way the teams are setting lineups. But for whatever reason, teams are not as averse to putting a big power guy in the leadoff position, and not necessarily a five-tool power guy. But Santana's not anybody's thought of being a particularly fast fella, and yet they put him in there. I kind of scratch my head, too. You point to the on-base percentage, the fact that he can draw walks. I'm sure that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's unorthodox, but, yeah, the Indians are not the only team in baseball doing it. I'm still coming around to understanding how and why that's happening, but I'm sure it'll probably become more clear to us in the years to come what people are thinking.
Well, yeah, that's the genius of Francona, you know, because Francona's doing something a little different that you would think nobody in the world would even dare do, but only Francona can even do it. And even with Stan, you know, the owners in the stands going crazy, you know, let alone the GM going crazy over every single move you make. And for him to just do things like that, I mean, that's kind of bizarre, but only he can do something like that.
Well, he's got a lot of leeway from the front office here, because let me tell you something. What I said before about this lineup being a lot better in reality than it is on paper, the front office and the ownership knows this too. He has papered over a lot of things they've done wrong over the years. I mean, you know, Paul Dolan didn't just automatically become a great owner. He's still pretty cheap. Check the salary numbers. The front office, they draft better than they used to, but that's really damning with faint praise. So Terry Francona is just somebody that really makes everybody look good in this organization, and as such, he may have more power as a manager than any other manager in baseball.
Yeah, it's true. He does have a lot of power. All right, so we're going to switch series for a minute, and, you know, the Cubs-Dodgers series is interesting. It's tied 1-1 now. We saw Kershaw pitch his absolute best again, so, you know, nobody's going to say anymore that, hey, he can't pitch in the playoffs. He basically, Chicago didn't know what to do with him. They really couldn't mount much, and you kind of wonder now, Rick, if this is something where the Cubs are being exposed a little bit. And look, I mean, most teams would probably be exposed if you could throw Kershaw out there a lot. But the Cubs were thought to be, you know, we're not going to say unbeatable, but you know, definitely the favorite. They were the favorite against the Mets, too, and they lost in that series. I mean, are we looking at something now where the Cubs have so much pressure on them that a game like this with Kershaw could throw them off?
You might think so, but you look at what they've already surmounted last year in getting past the Cardinals, this year in getting past the even-year Giants, and particularly when it looked like the Giants were going to mount that inevitable comeback against them. You know, they've already been through the crucible, I think, at this point a couple times along the way. You certainly don't go into a game against Kershaw expecting to win. You hope to win, but you certainly don't expect to. So the fact that L.A.'s already shot the Kershaw wad going back to Chavez Ravine for the next three games here, I don't know. Mike, I don't know what Nico thinks, but I'd be surprised if the Cubs were gripping that bad given what they've been through.
Well, here's the key. They're going to L.A., and you know, Kershaw's got a new name. It's King Kershaw. He has put a stamp on this game like no other pitcher in history. What a perfect game. He started with the first four and third innings there. Just perfect baseball. And this is just coming right after saving the game to actually get him in the championship. So just what a ball player he has been. And he's the dominant factor that the Dodgers are even here. And the Dodgers have a chance of this. It could be mesmerizing. What I saw tonight, I don't know if the Cubs can come back because the Dodgers keep throwing pitcher after pitcher at them, and the Cubs are just they're kind of frazzled.
Here's an interesting thing, Rick. So we've got Jake Arrieta against Rich Hill. On paper, you would think, well, Arrieta is just, you know, unbelievable. He might even hit a home run again himself. And yet he's got to do it over in L.A., and I kind of wonder if with the travel and everything else, with the spotlight and everything else, is Rich Hill going to be here and just sort of quietly pitch like a gem and really put the pressure on the Cubs? I think that could happen.
It could happen. But keep in mind here, too, the legacy of, you know, we look at the legacy of going back to 1908 and all the ghosts for the Cubs. It's always, I think, the most relevant what happens with the current crop of players. And yes, the Cubs had a situation where I didn't see it coming, but that beatdown that they took from your Mets last year, Russ, although in retrospect, not very surprising because few teams except the Indians when healthy can match the Mets pitching-wise when healthy. So no real shame in their game. The Dodgers, the legacy of this team going back over the last decade here, I laughed when they were paired up with Washington. I was like, well, somebody's got to not choke in the series, right? I mean, they got past Washington in a game where, quite frankly, it looked like both teams at various points in time were trying to give the game away. So this notion of the Dodgers as being these October slayers, it may yet happen. It just goes against their recent history, though.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for, you know, the bad base running, they may not even be in this position. You know, the Nationals probably had the upper hand in that, and they just kind of gave the game away with trying to score a runner that was clearly out there that really changed the tide of the game and shipped the momentum. And what a costly error. And then, like I said, what a great management opportunity for Dave Roberts to seize and let Kershaw save the day there. And you know, get the Dodgers over here to the pennant.
So here's the thing. So if we move to game four, Lackey's going for the Cubs. They're already announcing it. They're not announcing anybody for the Dodgers. And so you kind of wonder, win or lose, Rick, do you think Kershaw's going game four?
That would seem like a mistake. I wouldn't think that they would do that because it would seem to be a panic move. I mean, it's pretty rare to go game two, game four. So it could happen. I'd be surprised, though.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. I mean, game five is on that Thursday, so that would seem like the likely one. I mean, we'll sort of have to see how the series goes, but it's just one of those things that sort of popped in my head because if they were to lose this next one, I kind of wonder if they would go there. All right, so we look at coming up with the Indians, and so game three we've got Bauer against Stroman. I mean, Stroman seems to be pretty overrated as far as a Blue Jays pitcher. Yeah, I know he's done a little better lately. This would seem like this is a really good matchup for the Indians, Rick.
Well, and it's funny because I had Stroman on my fantasy team this year and certainly expected more things from him. But to an odd extent, I was thinking about this, that it's interesting that they're facing each other because this is the quintessence of a game that could go either way because they're both young guys who are somewhat putting it together, and then they have moments where it kind of flies apart. I looked it up and saw that Trevor Bauer's ERA, I think, was like 3.02 as of July 1st. And then the second half of the season happened, and it kind of went south from there. But Trevor Bauer was making a very good case to be an all-star in the first half of this season. And he's been a guy who has seemingly been on the verge of that for a while. Stroman is another guy. Seems to be on the verge. I think he's going to take that next step at some point. But these are the guys that are fascinating in October, Russ, because sometimes these guys surmount that point, even if only briefly. You think back on the pitching from Ventura with the Royals the last couple of Octobers here. He kind of stepped up a little bit beyond where he really was at that point in time. If either one of these guys does that tomorrow night, it's going to give their team a tremendous advantage.
And I really like this Bauer kid. He's a young kid that come in there. He's the good 1-2 punch right behind Kluber. I mean, he's their number two guy, and he's ready to go. And he's in game three there. So they could take an advantage of anything. They can go 3-0 real quick before anybody even knows it. In a blink of an eye, the Indians could be up 3-0 going into that fourth game.
Well, and a funny story, how he ended up being the Game 3 starter. He was supposed to go Game 2. You guys may not have heard about this, but a guy who – he's a brilliant guy, an engineering major in college, and quite frankly, him being a brilliant guy caused him problems in Arizona. They kind of like you to be dumb there and just kind of be a gritty guy who does what you're told. But, you know, it's been a little bit fitful with the Indians, too. He builds drones in his spare time. He had to be told by MLB, hey, don't fly your drone over spring training because he was taking pictures and stuff, and they deemed that a security thing. He was going to be going game two, except he cut his finger doing a routine repair on his drone the other night. And it's not serious. It was his pinky finger. He's going to be okay. He said he doesn't even really grip the ball with the pinky. But, I mean, that's just a colorful kind of a thing. When Nico's talking about, you know, Trevor Bauer being this, great, player and character. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if people outside Cleveland know the half of it.
No, I didn't hear that story, and it gives me shades of Bobby Ojeda in 1988 when he cut off the tip of his finger and couldn't pitch, and that was a huge loss for the Mets in the 88 series against the Dodgers, and then we know how that worked out. So I'm not going to talk about that anymore.
Yeah.
But what are we looking at here? Game four is Clevinger-Sanchez. So it would lead you to believe that the Indians really do need to go up 3-0 just so, hey, if they lose to Sanchez, who cares? Because that's a complete mismatch.
Well, yeah, I said before there was probably a 14-1 game in that series, and I think that's the one that you have circled. And, you know, one of these things too, Russ, when you look at the scouting reports, it's one of these things where, again, obviously, when you have, you know, the money in the bank, so to speak, you know, you don't care about anything that happens thereafter. But the game plan that was used with Tomlin, a fellow junk baller, of using the curveballs and try to get ahead of them that way, Toronto will just pound you on the fastballs, so try not to make yourself vulnerable on that. After seeing what Tomlin did to them, they're going to be ready for Clevinger to come at them in game four with stuff other than the fastballs. And if they're sitting on those, it could be equally ugly.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game, that game four. I think that's the game Toronto is going to win. You know, that's their one game in this series. And then, like I said, I think it's going to be Cleveland all the way. There's no stopping them this year. What I see on the field, the talent, they got great defense, they got great pitching, and it's light out. Andrew Miller has just come in. He's a beast. And when you talk about the Detroit Tigers, let him go. I mean, here's a first-round pick. He's been traveling the league for a couple of years now, and he's finally has found himself, and he's got the confidence, and he's just coming in there, and he's shutting the game down.
But if I remember correctly, I think that was the Miguel Cabrera trade, so they're probably not second-guessing it very much. You know, you talk about a deal that helped both teams, huh?
Yeah, that's a great trade.
That's true. All right, so, Rick, here's an interesting thing. And I haven't heard that there's an injury at play, but if there is, that would make a little sense. So we haven't seen R.A. Dickey even for a moment in these playoffs for Toronto. I get why they may not be using him as a starter, but the guy has a rubber arm. Has there not been a situation where he can come in, or does he have some sort of injury I haven't heard about?
I mean, I haven't heard anything. And the whole thing too, is – again, in terms of, I assume we would be talking about like just a nagging type of injury, just the fact that he's on their roster and wasn't scratched from it altogether. So I sort of struggle to think about it as a knuckleballer. I mean, you know, if you're a guy who relies on his, you know, plus stuff and you're not as effective, that's one thing. But a knuckleballer, now, then again, he's the rare guy who's been able to throw the quote-unquote fast knuckleball, albeit I believe with his numbers down this year, he probably hasn't had that kind of velocity anyways. But I will tell you this, as an Indians fan, I am relieved not to see him in there, even in relief situations, because that's the kind of thing that can discombobulate you. You face a guy like that, it can be kind of like getting vertigo, you know, readjusting to anybody else. They could really throw this Indians lineup off kilter a little bit by using him in different spots. So, yeah, I don't know why, but I'm grateful.
That's a key point there because, yeah, where is he? I mean, he's one of the Cy Young winners as well, and he's been waiting for a big moment. They got to bring him out sometime if he's healthy.
You got to believe they will. Now, here's my last last point. And, Nico, you could chime in on this right after Rick. But I kind of wonder, we got, like, Arrieta pitching in L.A., but the Dodgers pitchers are just so used to that pitcher's mound. And, you know, I've been told by different people that it's a home pitcher's mound, and maybe it's not exactly at league standards. It might explain why the Dodgers always seem to have a good pitching staff, Rick, every year, where even guys like a Rich Hill will have these tremendous records, and if I look it up, he probably has a great home record. Do you ever get that feeling when you're watching Dodger pitching?
Kind of, and I will just tell you, just on a weird sci-fi kind of a note, I've always been fascinated in my head with the notion of somebody trying to apply that kind of cheating technology in a ballpark. Think about if you had any kind of an elevator underneath that thing. It would only take a fraction of an inch, right? Between innings, you could probably, if you pushed a button and you had the hydraulics working, you could probably have that thing go back and forth. Maybe to your point, Russ, maybe the technology exists and they're using it. Hashtag conspiracy theory.
That's a nice conspiracy theory, but you're right. I would say it's a matter of, I guess, the ghost of L.A., I guess, because, yeah, the pitchers just dominate there. It's always been since Sandy Koufax days. The Dodgers always had the best pitching. I mean, they're always going to have good pitching. That's been their philosophy. They're going to hit you with pitching and defense. And then it's lucky that, you know, they've had some great offenses, too, and, you know, throughout the years.
I just think it's something with that mound. I do, Nico. I've been told it's worked the right way. They know the pitchers know how to use it. And I don't know. Nobody ever seems to like measure it or even call it into question, but we know all these ballparks, Nico, have these little home field sort of advantages. I really do think they have an advantage. I don't think they have a hydraulic, although I love the idea from Rick. But I just think the way it's worked, there is some sort of advantage that the pitchers know how to utilize.
Yeah, what a great mind to come up with that little elevator. I mean, now we're going to have every major league team trying to have their own little scientists trying to come up with a strategy to kind of get a couple of few inches here and there.
Just one of my many goofy ideas, guys.
Yeah. Nico, you got a minute left if you want to plug anything. Go right
ahead. Absolutely. Today's game brought to you by Myers, all right? So fresh and so good.
All right. And, Rick, we really appreciate you coming on. People could check out the FDH Lounge on Audio Boom, YouTube. It's everywhere. We appreciate it. And people could buy our book, Strike Three, or, you know, I have a Met book, Numbers Don't Lie. There's a bunch of books. You can check me out at Russ Cohen on Amazon. Appreciate everybody listening in, and as we get closer to the World Series, we'll come back for another week. Take care, everybody.
My man.
Sorry, kids. We're saving the treats for Mum and Dad this Halloween. When they buy the exciting Renault Capture or the equally adventurous Renault Kadjar from our award-winning crossover range, they'll now get an extra £750 towards their deposit with 3.99 APR representative until the 31st of October. Renault Finance, over 18, subject to status, participating dealers only. Registered by 31st of December. T's and C's apply. See renault.co.uk/offers.